Elton John movies. Is that what the Pope and the Vatican should be using the Peter Pence money for? I don't think so. I'm joined here today with the great, the formidable George Neumeier. We're going to talk about the blocking, the pausing of the Fulton Sheen beatification. Maybe talk a little bit about the Pope's recent statement on what he's added to the magisterium. So got a good show today. Great guest, George Neumeier. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
Good. I enjoyed seeing your clip with Cardinal Dolan, and we'll try to show that in just a little bit where you ask him to his face, why did you block the beatification of Fulton Sheen? Before we do that, we'll begin with prayer. In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Pater noster, qui est in Caeli, sanctificetur nomen tuum, advenia regnum tuum, fiat voluntas tua, sicut in cielo et in terra, panem nostrum quotidianum da nobis odie, et dimitte nobis debita nostra, sicut et nos dimittimus debitoribus nostris, ne nos inducas in tentationem, sed libera nos a malo. Amen. Nomine Patris et Filii, Spiritus Sancti. Amen. All right, George. Did you enjoy the Immaculate Conception?
I did. I did. Although I was working a little bit, you know, as you know, I'd been trying for the last 3 days to get Dolan on the record about why, you know, the role that he played in blocking the beatification of Fulton Sheen. I had sent emails to his press secretary, and I even went over to the Chancery on Thursday and tried to, you know, talk to his press secretary directly. But of course, they treated me like a leper, and they were not going to even, pay me the small courtesy of simply saying no comment even. So I decided on Sunday that I would go over to St. Patrick's Cathedral, and I know that every time that Dolan's in town, he says the 10:15, and I figured that after Mass, I might have a chance to ask him a question, and it just so happened that I was able to ask him why he blocked the beatification of Fulton Sheen, and he, of course, wasn't straightforward with me. He denied it and said I didn't block it, but as we know from Bishop Montano's letter, or his letters, in which he said that he consulted with New York about this matter, we know that Dolan played a role in suspending the beatification of Fulton Sheen. That's not even in question. So I don't know. I don't know why Dolan felt the need to lie to me and just say I didn't play any. You know, I didn't block it. He of course blocked it.
Yeah. And right. You want to show the clip?
Sure.
Let me see if I can put the clip up here for everybody at home. So let's see here. Okay. So this is. I get this is at St. Patrick's Cathedral.
It's at St. Patrick's Cathedral. It's the 10. It's at the end of the 10:15 Mass. It's the procession where Dolan schmoozes everybody as he's leaving the church. So I felt like it's an acceptable time to ask him a question.
And was this at the high altar or the side altar, Guadalupe? Where was he saying Mass?
He was saying it at the high altar.
High altar. Okay. All right. I'm going to run it here. Hopefully, everybody can hear it at home.
The beatification of Fulton Sheen?
I did.
Let's see that again real quick.
Beatification of Fulton Sheen?
I did.
Okay. Did you think he knew it was you? Did he recognize you?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I've talked to him once before. I don't know.
He knows who you are.
He must know who I am. Yeah, I think so. But I'm surprised, you know, at least he answered the question. You know, sometimes these guys don't even answer the question. But it's good to get him on the record because, you know, nobody else. I mean, we haven't heard anything from the principals who are responsible for this decision. We haven't heard from Supich. You know, Supich hasn't said a word about this. And Dolan hadn't said a word about this. The only person who said anything about it is Montano. And he, you know, he's said that through a letter or letters. But he, you know, it's good to get these guys on tape. you know, declaring one way or another whether they participated in this derailment of the Sheen beatification. So my question is, where are the other reporters? You know, where are the John Allens? You know, why aren't they doing this work? Why aren't they going up to Dolan? Because at least they have access. You know, Dolan isn't going to stiff arm a John Allen. You know,
that's why they have access, because they don't ask the hard questions.
Yeah, I guess that's what it comes down to. But in these situations where you want these guys to talk, you basically need a media scrum. Like, it can't just be one guy. It's got to be like 5, 6, 7 reporters. You know, if 7 reporters after mass went up to Dolan and said, "Hey, why did you block the beatification of Fulton Sheen?" He'd have to stop and talk about it for like 5 to 10 minutes. But if it's just one person like me, I can get one question in, and then he can just lie and say, "Oh, I didn't block it," and then move on. So, but you know, that's better than nothing, I think, especially when, you know, it's going to come to light. All the machinations behind this derailment of the beatification. We're going to find out exactly over time. We'll find out exactly how this went down. And Dolan, it'll come out that Dolan played a major role in stopping this.
Well, even the fact that he wouldn't allow the body to be transferred was right. A major obstacle. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that was, you know, because Peoria had said, you know, if we don't have a body, we're not going to go forward with the cause. You know, right. What's the point of, you know, we're supposed to do everything for the cause and then not have a shrine to Fulton Sheen, not have his body, you know, and also the scuttlebutt, or I don't even think it's scuttlebutt. I think it's fact. Egan, you know, the predecessor of Dolan, Cardinal Edward Egan, had made an agreement with Peoria. He said, if you guys push the cause, I will give you the body. And Dolan welched on that agreement. And so it's very easy to interpret Dolan's behavior here as basically just sour grapes, you know, that he was antagonistic towards all the folks in Peoria who were pushing this cause.
Yeah, before we get into Elton John movies and all this nonsense, it seems to me that if America had, I don't know, let's say America didn't trust postal workers, people who carry the mail at your door, you would think that the postal workers would want there to be a canonized saint who was a postal worker, kind of give them some creds, like, hey, look, we got our own saint. Right now, the U.S. bishops have the worst PR problem ever. Nobody trusts a United States bishop. Everybody thinks that they're lying, they're cheating, they're covering up predators, financial misdeeds. So you would think at this moment of crisis, late 2019, they would be like, yeah, let's just get one of our boys canonized, you know, at least then we got a saint, you know. But no, they don't want Fulton Sheen to be their canonized saint.
No, they, in fact, yeah, I would argue that they're basically turning Sheen into a sacrificial lamb for their own sins. You know, they're making Sheen pay for their own derelictions of duty. And they're trying to, you know, basically they see the Attorney General's bus headed towards them, and they want to stop it by throwing Fulton Sheen underneath it. And it's appalling because Sheen, I mean, Sheen was Bishop of Rochester for 3 years, you know, 1966 to 1969. How many cases could he possibly have bungled? You know, I mean, it just, you know, he barely got there before he left, you know. And so the idea that he is somehow the poster boy of covering up abuse is a joke. And we've seen no evidence so far from any of the people involved, including Montano, that he even mishandled one case, let alone multiple cases. You know, show us the evidence of that at least. But as we've seen with the canonization of John Paul II, that's obviously not an impediment. You know, having mishandled an abuse case is not an impediment to becoming a saint under this pontificate. So why are there these double standards with respect to Fulton Sheen? Why is he suddenly subjected to this very, very high standard of having handled every case perfectly? And I'd like to see Montano and all these kind of voices in the background that are insinuating that there are other cases out there that Sheen screwed up, you know, show us those cases. You know, they've had Rochester has had how many years to look to examine the files with respect to Fulton Sheen? They've had years and years and years to do that. They know all the cases that he would have handled. Why are they being so mysterious and vague about this? And what, you know, it all to me, it looks just like a big smear of Sheen, you know. And but at the very least, I mean, I'm open to the possibility that he did mishandle a case. I'm willing to follow the evidence wherever it leads, but nobody's supplying us with that evidence, and we're supposed to be waiting for this left-wing hack attorney general in New York City who's endorsed by the NAACP and the National Organization for Women. We're supposed to wait for her to let us know whether or not Fulton Sheen is a saint. You know, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, we all know why they want to block this. A, he's an enemy. Fulton Sheen is an enemy of Spellman. And Spellman is the granddaddy, spiritually and in all other ways, of Theodore McCarrick. There is a apostolic succession of all this perversion. I shouldn't use the word apostolic. There's a perverted succession in the United States hierarchy, and Spellman is where a lot of the rot derives from. And we know that Fulton Sheen and Spellman originally, I understand, were close and friends, but there was a falling out. And Fulton Sheen was always, you know, locked horns with Spellman. And Theodore McCarrick and everyone who descends from Theodore McCarrick's influence, and that includes Donald Wuerl, that includes Blaise Cupich, that includes basically everyone who has a red hat, Tobin, right? All these guys. And then Dolan, who's in New York, kind of has to preserve this legacy. These guys are not going to allow this guy right here, Fulton Sheen, to be the Bishop Saint of the United States of America. Also, Fulton Sheen was against communism. And currently, you know, the candy of the day in the church is communism. This is what the bishops and the pontificate want to promote. Look at China, if you don't believe me. Look at China. Who brokered that deal in China? Theodore McCarrick. So this is why they don't. And also, Fulton Sheen said, hey, the episcopate and the clergy will be corrupt. There will come a time when the laity have to sort this out, which is exactly what's happening in 2019. They don't want Fulton Sheen.
Right. Yeah. And Sheen also gives off an odor, in their view, of the pre-Vatican II church, the American Church of the Baltimore Catechism. He gives off too strong an odor of that for their taste. And that's, I think, another reason why they didn't want him to become a saint, is that he represents the very American Catholicism that they're trying to stamp out, you know, and they don't want, you know, they don't want a bunch of bishops to look to Fulton Sheen as a model. That's the last thing they want. Yeah. They want, you know, they want people to think that Tobin and Cupich and Wuerl are models of good Episcopal governance and good Episcopal teaching. And so, yeah, there's a huge element of, I think, jealousy at work here, and as you're saying, you know, we are seeing sort of the mischief of Cardinal Spellman's grand nephews. You know, if these guys are the nephews of McCarrick, they're the grand nephews of Spellman, and Spellman hated. Spellman went out of his way to try to damage the career of Sheen. He took him off the air. You know, he made sure that he wasn't on TV anymore. He wouldn't let him. He wouldn't even let Fulton Sheen preach at St. Patrick's Cathedral for many years. And then he exiled him to Rochester, made sure that he was exiled to Rochester, which is, you know, for a New Yorker, at Rochester looks like Siberia, you know. And it's not surprising to me that Sheen, you know, only lasted there for 3 years, because it really was a very undesirable assignment, particularly at that time when the church was completely coming apart. And Sheen was actually much more effective and much more used to the church as a kind of freelancing bishop who was going around the country and around the world teaching the faith. And he really wasn't well suited to be a bishop in the first place. I think what you said is true, that, yeah, he's too anti-communist to be a saint under this pontificate. He's too pre-Vatican II-ish to be a saint under this pontificate. And he's too American, in a way, to be a saint under this pontificate. We know that Francis has an antipathy towards Americans. He doesn't particularly like Americans. You know, he has a kind of anti-Yankee mindset that's very typical of Argentine leftists. And I'm sure that's affected, colored his view of whether or not the Sheen beatification should go forward. One of the things I've noticed in all the coverage is that the Pope is kept completely out of the coverage. You know, the blame is placed on Parolin, that Parolin made the decision to pull the plug on the beatification. Well, give me a break. I mean, you know, nothing happens at the Vatican without Francis's approval. So anything that Parolin did, he does with the approval of Francis. So this was Francis killing the canonization of Sheen, because a bunch of American cardinals who have his ear, like Supich and I guess Dolan to a certain extent. I mean, 2 weeks ago, Dolan and Matano and all the New York bishops were over in Rome for an ad limitum visit. And yep. Do we really think that during that period they weren't whispering to Parolin and to Francis and to everybody at the Vatican, hey, we got to stop this Sheen beatification? I mean, the question I'd like answered is, who set the date in the first place? Who in the office of the Congregation for the Causes of the Saints set the date in the first place? Who's that figure? I mean, there must be some sort of, you know, people are working, must be working at cross purposes at the Vatican for the date to have even been set. But I'd like to know, who is that figure and what does he think of what's happening right now? You know, but of course, we're not going to get any reporting on that, because the John Allens and who are over there in Rome, they're not going to do that kind of reporting.
Nope. So, you like Lord of the Rings, George?
I have to say that I'm not. I don't follow that very closely. So
All right. Well, there's this cool scene in Lord of the Rings where Gandalf the Grey, he's talking to Saruman the Wise, the two wizards. And then there's this point where in this tower, and Gandalf realizes Saruman's evil. There's this moment where you see Gandalf's eyes kind of like widen out, and he's like, oh man, this guy betrayed me, and he's the guy behind all the evil in the whole Lord of the Rings universe. And I always imagine that this is the parallel between Fulton Sheen and Spellman. You know, they're like hanging out one day, and then Spellman says something, and Gandalf says, oh snap. Spellman's the bad guy, you know, and this initiates all these epic fights and controversy between these two men who are, you know, leaders, and yet they realize they're on the different side of the moral debate for their time.
Yeah.
So in this story, that makes Fulton Sheen the Gandalf, right? He's the one who's trying to do the right thing, but he's being undercut by his own confreres.
Right. Yeah. And
I had to do a little Lord of the Rings, and they hadn't done it in a while.
I think, there are going to be some very interesting backstories about that rivalry that are going to come out in the next few years. I know that people are, one gentleman is working on a book about this, and he has some explosive material which he's talked with me about, and I don't feel like I can share it, but it does not reflect well on Spellman, and it may not, you know, there were times, I guess, when Sheen did hit Spellman pretty hard. I guess there, you know, there's back and forth in terms of letters that I guess don't make either of the figures look all that great. But Sheen, I think, didn't Sheen at the end of his life in that book, The Treasure of Clay, didn't he talk sort of generally about how he wished he had handled certain situations better? And with, you know, he was kind of making oblique reference to the Spellman situation.
Yes. I speculate, this is speculation, this is not facts, but I think there are some facts that point to this. You know, Fulton Sheen helped bring Bella Dodd back to the faith. Yeah. And I cover this in my book, Infiltration. It's like page 83 to 86. I think it's around there. But he helped bring Bella Dodd. Now, Bella Dodd said that there were a number of high-up clergy that were working for the communists, that were infiltrators, including those who had red hats. They told this to Dietrich von Hildebrand and his wife. And so if you read Infiltration, I'm very careful about it. I don't come out and say it, but I do sort of suggest that perhaps maybe Spellman might be one of these, just because of what we know later about McCarrick and Bernadine and other things that were going on in the country. We also know that Fulton Sheen told Belladad not to release names. And a lot of people have wondered, why on earth would if the church had been infiltrated all the way up to red hats, cardinals in the U.S., why wouldn't Fulton Sheen want to expose this? We don't know, but maybe it goes back to this rivalry between Spellman and Sheen, and maybe Sheen didn't want it known for some reason. I don't know the facts, but there's a lot of things going on there with Belladad, Sheen, Spellman. That story has not been told yet.
Yeah, and we don't even, I would like to know to what extent Sheen's knowledge of the homosexual subculture, which Spellman was quietly fostering within the church. I wonder how much Sheen knew about that and how much that played into Sheen's willingness to take on Spellman and to fight with him, you know, because, you know, we know, I mean, the comments that you referenced earlier about, you know, that Sheen made about, that the church is going to be hijacked by her own clergy, by all these traitors within the highest ranks of the clergy, and that the laity will end up having to wrest the church away from these frauds and imposters. There's no doubt that Sheen, you know, was drawing upon his own knowledge of the filth within ecclesiastical life and all the heresy within ecclesiastical life. So.
But another interesting story would be to find out if Sheen, if there's any recorded interaction between him and McCarrick. I would love anyone out there, all you journalists and scholars, look into this. Is there any interaction between Sheen and McCarrick? I know there's interactions between Spellman and McCarrick and Spellman and Sheen. But I'd love to see how all this was happening, how this was shaken out in the 70s and, you know, before.
Right.
When did Sheen die? I used to know.
I'm guessing early 80s or...
No.
Was it later than that?
I thought it was like 79.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
In the comments, tell us.
Yeah.
Here, I'm looking it up.
There's a famous picture of, which I find very edifying. There's a picture of John Paul II hugging an elderly Fulton Sheen, and it's a very poignant picture because you can see on Sheen's face, you know, all the anxieties, all the tribulations that he had to endure, you know, over the course of a long ecclesiastical career, and John Paul II was hugging him, you know, maybe as if to say, you know, we understand each other, you know, we understand this is a pretty tough time in the history of the church for a churchman to try and keep the faith, you know, and hold the faith. And
all right, I got his death here. It's 1979.
Okay.
Oh, December 9th, 1979. So today.
Okay.
We're recording this December 9th, 79. So this is 2019. So this is what is that, 40 years? Yeah. Today is the 40-year anniversary of Fulton Sheen's death. How about that? Yeah, so he died right... So there was John Paul I. He was murdered. I mean, he died. And then there's John Paul II. And then Fulton Sheen died early on in John Paul II's pontificate, within months.
Yeah, yeah.
So... Yeah, Fulton Sheen saw none of the 80s.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Well, speaking of the 70s and the 80s and a bunch of oddities, let's talk about Elton John.
Okay.
I never thought on this show I'd ever be talking about Elton John. And unfortunately, the Vatican has forced me to talk about Elton John because they dropped some money into the biopic about Elton John called Rocketman. I haven't seen the film. no surprise. But apparently they dropped some money in this. What do you know about this, George?
Well, the story is that the money that the Vatican put into this outrageous and, I guess, obscene movie, I guess it originated with Peter's Pence, right? That it was It was money that the faithful have given to the Vatican on the assumption that it's going to go to papal charities that are real charities.
The poor.
Yeah, to go to the poor. And so instead, the money apparently ended up in a Maltese investment firm, you know, that the person running the Maltese investment firm, I guess, was friends with folks in the Parolin's office, Secretary of State's office. And they got millions of dollars for various movies that the investment firm was financing, one of which was this semi-pornographic or pornographic Elton John biopic.
Right.
And
has a sex scene with two dudes in it.
Yeah, which I guess, yeah, and I guess a bunch of countries, Russia, Malaysia, a bunch of Middle Eastern countries have cut that scene out of the movie, you know, because it's too pornographic. And so at any rate, but one of the ironies here is that after the church put the money into this movie through this Maltese investment firm, they ended up losing money on the movie. So it's an example of how, even in a worldly sense, how hapless this Vatican is. You know, they can't even make money off porn, apparently. You know, and this isn't the first time the church has done this kind of thing. Don't you remember? Maybe is that 5-10 years ago? Remember the German bishops were investing in a publishing house in Germany?
Yes, I remember this.
That the publishing house was producing pornography.
Yeah, they were doing all of these, if I remember the story correctly, these romance novels, but they have all of this, you know, the story's all about, you know, pornographic, you know, adulterous fornication, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that came to mind. But also another thing came to mind, which is Osservatore Romano under this pope has been producing these really bizarre obituaries about non-Catholic figures, these celebrities, and they've done at least two that are just absolutely ridiculous. One was on Michael Jackson, which was a very laudatory, and then another was, which was also equally laudatory, was one on David Bowie. And so I can only imagine the obit the Osservatore Romano is going to roll out when Elton John dies. But it's particularly farcical that this sort of thing is happening with this Vatican, because this Vatican is going around telling all of the religious orders and all of the dioceses around the world, you need to make sure that you're not investing in Exxon and Mobil, and you're not investing in oil companies, and you're not giving money to gun manufacturers. And so while they're saying that, they're putting money into a pornographic Elton John biopic.
Yeah. And also this whole idea, like you wrote, you know, writing the obituaries of Michael Jackson and whatnot and David Bowie. It's incredible. I mean, we saw during the Dubia crisis, I guess we're still in the Dubia crisis, but the Dubia fathers, cardinals, couldn't meet with Pope Francis. They were asking and begging for a meeting to discuss the Dubia regarding Amoris. Couldn't get in. And then you see, you know, Bono from U2, the band.
Oh, yeah.
Who, by the way, publicly dedicated a song to Theodore McCarrick. I think I showed the footage once on this show. I don't have it right now. Bono sang a song and dedicated it to Theodore McCarrick on stage.
Right.
Bono gets to stroll in and hang out with the Pope. Leonardo DiCaprio, he gets to chill with the Pope. Cardinal Burke, His Eminence, no tickets for him.
No, yeah.
What's the deal?
Yeah, U2 perform in the Sistine Chapel, which was the first time a rock band had ever performed in the Sistine Chapel, and that was considered to be, you know, oh, no big deal, and that's okay, and you know, we need to you know, make the Vatican a much more casual place and all this stuff. But when you go to Rome now, as you know, as you'd probably remember, it's like you don't feel, if you're a normal, ordinary pilgrim, Catholic pilgrim, you don't feel welcome at the Vatican. You know, good luck trying to get into the Sistine Chapel unless you're willing to stand in the museum line for 5 hours. You know, it's not a place of pilgrimage. It's a quasi religious Disneyland.
Yeah, when you go into the Sistine Chapel, last time I was there like 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, it is just people pushing you to the doors, and there's this Italian gentleman every 3 seconds that yell, "No photo, no photo," over and over. I'm like, I don't think anyone's taking a photo in here because you're yelling it so much, but they just keep saying, "No photo." It's like you couldn't pray a Hail Mary in there if you tried.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, so. Ridiculous. And the museums, they're putting, I've heard that the museums are one of the ways that the Vatican's actually in the black. They make so much money on the Vatican Museum.
Yeah.
But there's so many people. I remember being, you know, moving through one of the halls. There's no air conditioning in there. I'm sweating. Everyone around me is sweating. All these sweaty people are pushing, and we're all packed, and we're just kind of taking baby steps and moving. You can't stop and look at anything. You're just sort of moving along, hoping that in the next room you can, you know, get away from other people's bodies and take a breath. It's horrible. Yeah. It's really horrible.
Yeah, it's the least, to me, it was one of the least spiritually edifying experiences to go to the Vatican, you know, because the St. Peter's Square now feels like the UN, you know, like the United Nations Plaza in New York City. It's got that, hideous statue, which is a tribute to illegal immigration, and that's marring the overall atmosphere of the Bernini arms, you know, which might as well be renamed the George Soros arms, because it doesn't look like a holy place anymore. It looks like like the UN Plaza or a kind of religious Disneyland, a quasi religious Disneyland. And there's no atmosphere of reverence whatsoever. But, you know, when you walk into St. Peter's Basilica, you know, people are treat the place like it's a gymnasium or something.
Well, I was in St. Peter's, recently. And I was really surprised that they were running. Two things struck me as new. There's this giant street sweeper. It looks like the thing that's at a hockey game that repaves the ice. What is that thing called?
I know what you're talking about.
They were running that. So there's thousands of people, and it's just kind of like, meep, meep, meep. And there's a guy riding it inside St. Peter during the day. I'm like, I don't know. Could you maybe run that at night, you know, or after hours? I mean, it's just kind of weird that the giant street sweeper was, and it's huge, bigger than a truck. You know, is driving around while people are in there trying to pray. And then the other thing that struck me, George, was they put in these LED lights
all over.
So when you look up, like let's say you're leaving the altar of St. Gregory the Great from the sacristy and you're walking to the door of St. Peter to leave. There's kind of those side transepts or those side aisles, you know, and there's altars in there. If you look up there, there are these glaring LEDs shooting down. And I was like, that's new. That's, you know, that's post Laudato Si. They're trying to make some point like, oh, we use LEDs. But man, when Michelangelo designed that place, he did not design it for LED light. It looks bad. Get rid of that. Francis, cancel the LEDs in St. Peter's. No good. Okay, so on this story, not only was it Rocket Man, they put 1 million euro. Now, this is money, by the way, people. Your grandma was at Mass one Sunday, and the priest said, oh, this is Peter Pence. This is a special second offering for the Pope so that he can give money to the poor and help people. This is his purse to assist and aid the poor of the world, Peter's Pence. So your grandma said, oh, I want to help that. And she wrote her check and she wrote a $20 offering and put it in the envelope for the second offering for Peter Pence. She was writing a check to fund Rocket Man, or at least partially, 1 million euro. And then an additional, get this, George, an additional 3 million euro went to the new Men in Black movie.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe did you, I mean maybe the investors at Rome were like, Men in Black, that sounds like cassocks. Let's invest in that.
Yeah. Yeah, that maybe they thought that one could have been concealed from the faithful by the title, but
right. Men in Black. Yeah. So
but the Christian brothers and a lot of orders, it turns out that they make a ton of money off pornography. And
Christian brothers are pretty bad.
They invest in like hotel chains that profit off pornography, and people will bring this to their attention, and they'll always shrug and say, "Oh, well, it's all indirect. You know, we're not really directly funding this. We're just funding the company that funds it." But they don't take that attitude when it comes to divesting from coal companies or divesting from gun manufacturers. Or they you know, in that case, they are very scrupulous. But when it comes to this stuff, they're extremely casual and they're willing to, you know, try and make money off corrupting the hell out of people.
Yeah. It also reads that Vatican funds account for 2/3 of the money entrusted to a group called Centurion, making the Catholic Church its largest investor. So there's this group Centurion. 67% or 66.6% goes to Centurion. And this led to a 4.61% loss in 2018, which amounted to a €2 million loss last year.
Yeah.
So they're investing in this firm. And you know, it's like on Judgment Day. Well, there's a famous quote of St. Thomas More. He's like, what does it profit to gain the world and lose your soul? But he says to his friend, but to gain whales?
Yeah.
Like, you lost your soul to get whales? This is like, you lost your soul to invest money in an Elton John movie, and you lost €2 million. it's like a double whammy loss, spiritual and temporal loss.
Yeah, this cries out for the parable of the bad steward,
yeah.
The bad and heretical steward. But but the ethos at the Vatican is so ridiculously gay. You know, like I noticed in Rome, like if you walk around the gift shops of Rome, including the gift shops that are in buildings owned by the Vatican, you always see this one calendar of the priest of the month. You know that calendar where it's a totally gay calendar.
It's like seminary pictures of seminarians or something.
Yeah. And I don't know if these are real guys, if they're real priests. Some people say no, they're all just models. But the fact that these things are being priestly hunk of the month calendars are being sold in all these buildings that are owned by the Vatican just tells you how gay the atmosphere at the Vatican is.
Yeah. Elton John style.
I mean, you know, so, you know, I've been writing about this priest, as you know, this corrupt Monsignor in Washington, D.C., Walter Rossi. And this guy made a funny comment to me about Walter Rossi's extracurricular activities, which... He was contrasting Rossi with this heterosexual priest who was on staff at the shrine, who was getting a hard time from Rossi. This is some years back, and Rossi really didn't like this heterosexual priest, and precisely because he was heterosexual and not homosexual. He probably didn't like him because he didn't accept his advances or something. But at any rate, one of the funny comments that was made to me about this. This rivalry between these two priests was, and the difference between these two priests was, this guy said, "Oh, Father so-and-so, he goes to baseball games in his free time. Monsignor Rossi goes to Elton John concerts." And, so that's really, I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with a priesthood with an ecclesiastical culture that is just immensely gay. And that's why an outrage like Peter's Pence financing an Elton John biopic could happen. This wasn't an oversight. This was, you know, somebody in Paroline's office had to have been told, "Hey, money is going to an Elton John biopic. And that person probably just said, oh, that's fine.
They're like, you know, sweet. Do we get free tickets?
Yeah.
Do we get to meet Elton? Does this mean we get to meet Elton if we fund the movie? Yes. Yeah. Okay, we are in. We want this. Is there any legal recourse? I mean, these people all over the world gave to a second collection Peter Pence and were told one thing and they were lied to. Their money went to a movie investment firm that made filthy films. What's the legal recourse? I mean, can people sue the Vatican or sue the Secretary of State? I mean, what is the recourse here? Why isn't the Pope apologizing for this? It's scandalous.
Right. Unfortunately, because of the hierarchical, monarchical structure of the church, it's almost impossible to sue the higher ups when they behave in this manner. Like, you know, you'd think the Papal Foundation at this point would have sued the hell out of the Vatican for just, you know, ripping them off to the tune of millions of dollars just so that a corrupt hospital could be bailed out, you know, and bad loans from the Vatican could be repaid. But I, as far as I can tell, nobody from the Papal Foundation can sue the Vatican. So really, you know, once you give the money to the church, once you give money to hierarchs, they can do whatever they want with it.
But if I donate money to the local Catholic school and I think it's going to help educate inner city kids, because that's what the guy at the dinner told me, and then I find out it was to make a David Bowie film.
Yeah.
I mean, that's illegal.
You'd think some of these attorney generals would get around to investigating the hierarchs who behaved in such a derelict manner with respect to the Papal Foundation. Why isn't there an attorney general? Why is the attorney general of Pennsylvania going after Donald Wuerl and Theodore McCarrick for having lied and having, you know, all these conflicts of interest, you know, when they were talking about, when they were doing the vote on the loan? And there were all sorts of shenanigans there that I would think an attorney general could make a lot of hay out of. But for some reason, nobody's touched that yet.
Yep. Listen, folks, there's 1,928 people watching. If any of you watching this right now ever give one penny to Peter Pence, you're wrong. At this point, I don't see how anyone can give one red cent to Peter Pence, to Rome, to the Vatican, or to the USCCB. I mean, and 97.4% of the bishops don't even deserve a red cent of everything going on, covering up immorality. Covering up immorality, and then just the constant preaching of heresy and modernism in all these pulpits across America. You know, real Catholicism is not represented. What you hear is, you know, immigration and be nice to people and let's, you know, support the local imam in his new mosque. This is what you hear. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. 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 God knows how much money has gone from the faithful to that UN style temple of universal religion
the Abraham.
You know that the Catholic faithful's money is going to that thing.
Yep.
So, we're basically giving money to the church, and the church takes that money and it uses that money to breed our own destroyers, you know? And I remember I wrote about some years back, I wrote about how Cardinal Bernardine, who was a molester, you know, James Grine has come out and said that he was molested by Cardinal Bernardine. Cardinal Bernardine paid for the political education of Barack Obama. He was using the faithful's money to send Barack Obama out to an Alinskyite training camp in California in 1980, I believe. And that was money coming straight from the faithful. And so in a very real way in America, the Catholic Church was breeding her own destroyer, you know, and we're seeing this now under this pontificate on a global scale all over the place.
There was also the story that broke earlier, I think it was this month, in which $200 million was used to buy this player's pad in London. Did you see that one? There was this real estate deal, a luxury property that was in the Chelsea district in London.
Right.
And it was $200 million Vatican dollars that went towards this. And you're just thinking, I don't know if St. Peter and St. Paul would have bought that.
Yeah, I think and we've learned that those apartments were the seed of gay orgies and
party pad.
And for all Elton John's biopic was probably on in the background.
Probably. So they probably rented maybe got free access since they invested in it. They could watch Rocket Man while they sat on leopard print sofas and stuff.
And that's another investment that we don't even know if the Vatican made money off that, off that investment, you know? So
they seem to not be very good investors. Maybe they should just go back to preaching the gospel and assisting the poor and not investing money. That's my personal suggestion to Pope Francis and the Vatican. Stop investing money and use it for missions, building churches in the third world, building real churches in China, and assisting poor people, feeding poor people. What if instead of $200 million going to a pimp pad in London, what if that $200 million, I don't know, fed people?
Right.
That would be good. Well, that
seems like, yeah, the terminus of modernism is that the church not only loses her soul, she even loses her worldly prestige. And she becomes a failed institution, even on temporal and worldly terms, like so many others. It's a great, you know, metaphor, I guess, for the church that so many of these dioceses across the world are declaring financial bankruptcy. You know, we're bankrupt. You know, modernism produces a church that's bankrupt spiritually, morally, and financially.
Yeah. And then we also saw, I mean, speaking of financial scandals, the Amazon Synod in Rome, funded in part by the Ford Foundation, which promotes LGBT LMNOP identity, abortion, third world contraception, sterilization, all these things. And yet the Vatican is just like, yes, please give us more money. Filthy money, please.
Right. Yeah. The same Ford Foundation that built much of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Notre Dame was on the payroll of the Ford Foundation under Theodore Hesburgh for years. Theodore Hesburgh was on the board of the Ford Foundation, I believe. And we're seeing the world seep into the church more and more. And take, in many ways, take over the church. And yet at the same time, even in worldly terms, the church is failing. The church looks pathetic. And it's like the UN itself. I mean, does anybody really have any respect, real respect for the United Nations? You know, so that's what happens when you turn your church into just like, yeah, I mean, he has respect for it, but when you turn your church into a branch of the United Nations, the consequence is that it becomes as irrelevant in a way as the UN itself.
Yep. Yeah, they just need to get back to what our Lord Jesus Christ said, which was to give food to the hungry, drink to the thirsty, clothe the naked, not make movie scenes with naked people in them. That's not what our Lord said in Matthew 25. Yeah. He said, clothe the naked, visit the imprisoned. I mean, this is the stuff that we're supposed to be doing to serve our Lord.
Yeah.
And the Vatican's just not doing it. And the people, I just want to say something here. On social media, people come after me, they come after you, and they're like, why are you being mean to Pope Francis? We're not being mean to Pope Francis, folks. Look at this. You cannot give this a pass. There is no way to say, well, somehow this is serving the good. This is somehow serving the gospel. It's impossible. There is no way that all of these bad cardinals right? And these bad investments and these horrible sex scandals and the financial scandals, and they happen every few weeks, people, globally.
Right. And if we don't protest these things, we're just going to get more of them. You know, so, you know, to a certain extent, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, you know, so if you draw attention to these outrages, these churchmen will be a little bit more circumspect in the future. You know, you're not going to get another semi-pornographic film financed by the Vatican probably for a while because of this exposure on the Elton John film. So that's the value of protesting, is that the thing that you protest will probably happen with less frequency after your protest. So
yeah, they're not going to do it because they fear the Lord. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Right. They don't worry about going to hell. They don't believe in hell. They're hoping that everyone goes to hell. If the atheist they teach is going to go to heaven because he's a nice guy and he helped an old lady one day, well, then they, as cardinals, are definitely going to heaven. That's how they see this thing, right?
Right.
And you know what's interesting, George? I bet you're up in the Northeast. I bet you there's meetings with big wig Democrat party guys smoking cigars and drinking scotch, and they say stuff like, how much does it cost to buy a cardinal? How much do we have to invest to make sure that Cardinal Dolan never mentions the word abortion, contraception, LGBT, gay, homosexual ever in his career as the Archbishop of New York? How much money does that take?
Right.
And I think someone says, well, if we donated to a school fund and the Met Gala and we did this and we did that, you know, we would pretty much have him locked in at 51% of his donations, of his funding. I think we'd pretty much buy him for that. Okay, well, what's that number? 9.1 million. Like, that's it? We can buy a cardinal for 9.1 million? Done.
Yeah.
Make those donations. And they do the same thing now with the Pope.
Oh, yeah.
How much does it cost to buy a Pope?
Yeah, well, we found out from the WikiLeaks disclosures, you know, three, 4 years ago, how much George Soros invested in lobbying the Pope before his visit to America. He spent like $1 million to send 40 lobbyists or so over to the Vatican to have meetings with Cardinal Maradiaga, who's often called the Vice Pope. That's how powerful he is. Mm-hmm. And all these lobbyists, the whole point of the meeting, which Soros paid for, was to shape the Pope's visit to America. And they got it. They got what they paid. You know, they got exactly what they paid for. The Pope's visit to America, it involved no distinctive Catholicism whatsoever. He spent all of his time simply talking about politically liberal themes. You know, you could have taken any of his speeches during that visit to America and put it in the mouth of Nancy Pelosi, and nobody would have known the difference.
That's right.
And so that Soros found out from that episode that it only takes about $1 million to determine what a Pope talks about during a papal trip to the United States.
Yep. Do you think is this revealing to us, George, that the Vatican is broke, or are they just dumb? I mean, why are they so hungry to get Ford Foundation money and Soros money and Elton John Rocket Man money? Or maybe they just
I think they have to turn, you know, the more the faithful withhold money from them, the more they have to turn to worldly sources for money. I don't know. I mean, I think, as somebody put it, sin and heresy do make people stupid.
Yeah.
And it could be that, you know, these churchmen, under the influence of sin and under the influence of heresy, they end up losing their reason. You know, so in a way, that's another mark of modernism, is that you end up with a church that loses both revelation and reason. And a church like that is bound to end up bankrupt. So I think that's in part what we're seeing. But I was going to make a point about you had said the value. We were talking about the value of protests and how and I thought this is one of the reasons why I confronted Dolan after Mass, is that I did not want Dolan to leave the 10:15 mass, and I didn't want him to go back to his buddies and say, hey, nobody brought up Fulton Sheen. You know, we had a week of Fulton Sheen. We had a Fulton Sheen controversy for a week. I say the 10:15 mass in the biggest city in the United States, and not a single person mentions Fulton Sheen to me. I didn't want to say that when he got back to his buddies. And that's why I went up to him and I said, why did you block the beatification of Fulton Sheen? And Dolan will remember that. Dolan is going to remember that somebody came up to him at the mass the week, the days after the beatification was derailed. Somebody came up to him and said, hey, why did you block the beatification of Fulton Sheen? So that's the value of protest. And what I'd say to your viewers is confrontation is absolutely necessary at this point in order to make an impression on these dubious churchmen. You have to confront them. You should do it, of course, in a civil and circumspect way. You shouldn't be out of control or anything like that. And you should give them...
No Chuck Norris.
Yeah, I mean, you need to be reasonably circumspect and civil. But I see great value in people going up to these churchmen and demanding that they answer fundamental questions about what they're doing to the church. These guys have to be held accountable, and it has to be done in a very concrete way by simply going up to them and asking them. And that should be the most natural thing in the world, where a shepherd and his flock are one. You know, why should we have to kiss the ring of, you know, like you have to worry about asking a shepherd a question? Why? Right. You know, especially at a time of crisis, the flock should be able to get to the shepherd and say, why are you letting this crisis continue? You know, and I just don't understand why there aren't more people confronting these bad churchmen, because I really see no solution to the crisis apart from that kind of approach. You know, the approach that you're taking, where you're exposing all this through social media and through your work, you know, by drawing attention to all of this stuff, you're making it less likely to happen in the future.
Yeah, because again, these men don't fear God. Their biggest worry is they're in a recession, and George Neumeier pops out and said, why'd you block the beatification of Fulton Sheen? Or they're leaving dinner on the P.O. Borgo, and then George Neumeier walks up with a phone and starts asking them questions.
Yeah.
That's their worst nightmare. I bet there's so many conversations where they're like, man, I'm just worried that one day I'm going to turn the corner and George Neumeier is going to be there with his iPhone. Speaking of George, we need to get you like an iPhone hat.
I know. I'm technically maladroit. So
I need you to have some glasses that has like a camera on it.
Yeah.
So we can get some good shots with the mic. Or maybe you need like a caddy. You need like a little assistant.
Yeah, I do.
Sub-beacon, and he holds a camera, like a small camera.
Yeah. It's pretty, you know, the quality of the film, of the camera angles is always horrible. But for some reason, I often catch...
You get some good stuff. Pretty impressive.
I catch the principal person saying the thing that is most damning. But so sometimes I have it at the right angle, but it's often very wobbly. And yeah, I'm doing this by myself. And this, I was astonished that I actually even had a chance to ask Dolan a question yesterday, because it was a packed Christmas, you know, season audience, you know, in New York City. And
I guess since this is Novus Ordo, second Sunday of Advent, it's perfect. But here he is. Yeah, I mean, he comes within, 10 inches of you. Underfoot. He's right there.
Right. And I'm a big believer, even though I'm very shy, actually, most of the time, but I'm a big believer in confrontation as a way to affect change within the church, provided it's peaceful confrontation. And so whenever I hear a bad sermon from a priest, I'll go up to him after Mass and I'll say, where in the catechism is, you said the following, where in the catechism could I find that? Mm-hmm. And they'll start hemming and hawing, or they'll start stuttering or something like that. And I think to myself, well, I bet at the next Mass, they're going to delete that line or that paragraph from their sermon.
Yep.
So I think that this is a way for us to reclaim our church through peaceful confrontation. And I wouldn't normally advise this, except that we've gotten, it's so, you know, things have gotten so bad in the church that we, you know, desperate times call for desperate actions.
Yep. Yeah, so everybody out there, you know, you guys have seen Alexander Chiguo, George Neumeier. I mean, you guys got iPhones. You guys got voice recorder on your phone. You've got a video camera. You can do this. You can say, Your Excellency, you asked us to give to the CCHD, but it looks like the CCHD is supporting things that don't conform to Catholic teaching. Why did you tell us to vote or give to CCHD? Or are you going to support CCHD in the future? This is not disrespectful. This is not giving anyone the middle finger, right? Yeah. It's asking a Catholic question to a Catholic leader. And we as lay people should know, why did you support CCHD? Why did you support an Elton John film?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see, you know, even one of the reporters in Rome that we know, like our friends over there, I wish they could just go up to Parolin and say, mm-hmm. Why did you finance this Elton John movie?
Yeah.
You know, that would be a very easy interview to do. I mean, it's very simple. Why did you finance this movie? And see what he says. Or somebody in Chicago should go up to Supich and say, hey, why did you block the beatification of Fulton Sheen? Or go to Rochester, Montano. Somebody in Rochester needs to go to Montano and say, put up or shut up. You say, you insinuate that there are other cases. What other cases?
Mm-hmm.
You know, spell out the cases that you're talking about. You've had access to the files for 10 years. You know, why are you being so vague about this? You know, so we need, as long as you're asking a question that truly deserves an answer, there's nothing wrong with asking it of a churchman in a respectful way under the right circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, the Elton John one is just that's one that everybody can see right away. Like, oh yeah, he gave money to an Elton John biopic that has a gay sex scene in it. Bad. Not good.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought like Benny and the Jets was about Pope Benedict. Maybe that's what they thought.
Yeah. Like
Candle in the Wind. That's Catholic. Candles are Catholic. What's another Elton John song? Candle in the Wind. Crocodile Rock. That's one, right? Crocodile Rock.
Yeah.
It's just like, I mean, I guess he's got some good jingles or something, but you know, you can't make the movie about Elton John with our money, grandma money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tiny Dancer. What is this, man? You know,
it's bad enough that we're paying the priestly salaries of guys, of priests who go off to share concerts and all, you know, that they're spending their salaries on this nonsense.
Yeah, Tiny Dancer, and I'm looking at the songs here. Rocket Man, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. I mean, come on, we can't. Come on, Catholic Church, Pope, Vatican, Secretary of State, we can't. We can't do this, you know. And like you said, it's like, you know, supporting Cher and Elton John. I mean, it's campy, gay culture. Let's just be honest about that.
Yeah.
It's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing because I got Protestant family and friends. I'm trying to like say, man, being Catholic's awesome. The Eucharist, the Blessed Mother. And they're like, yeah, but that Elton John. It's like, how do we respond to this?
Right.
You know, it's like, well, your Pope sounds like a communist and they fund Elton John biopics. And you're like, that's a good point. I got no answer for that.
And how do we attract to the priesthood the right candidates when the ecclesiastical culture is so campy and so gay?
Right.
You know, I mean, we need young people to enter the priesthood who are capable of making the sacrifice of the priesthood, and that means you want candidates who are heterosexual, who are going to give up that part of their lives for the sake of worshiping God and serving the people of God and being a symbol, you know, of the life to come. And you can't, if a person is incapable of making that sacrifice because they're not attracted to the opposite sex and not attracted to marriage and family life, if they're not capable of making that sacrifice, or even, you know, feel the need to make that sacrifice, you're going to end up with a priesthood that looks like the one we've got right now, which is a priesthood that's, you know, God knows how, you know, 50 to 60% gay. And, you know, even somebody as liberal as Wilton Gregory, remember Wilton Gregory had one moment of candor when he said the priesthood has become a gay profession. And that's, you know, in order to change that, you have to have an ecclesiastical culture that attracts normal men. And that's certainly not that's not what we're getting from this Vatican. We're getting, you know, the gay mafia in the church surrounds Pope Francis. I mean, this is a Vatican that is owned and operated by the gay mafia.
Yep. I got a suggestion for all the vocation directors out there. When a new man comes in, he feels called the priesthood, ask him his favorite Elton John song. If he gives you any correct answer, he's out.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I just love Tiny Dancer.
Yeah.
That guy's not suitable.
Yeah.
What do you think, George? Good?
Yeah. Yeah. Ask them also. Yeah. Have you ever watched a Cher film? Have you ever been to a Cher concert?
What's your favorite? If you had to pick going to a Cher concert or Elton John concert, which would you pick? You know, it's off topic, George. Several years ago, my wife had this inside joke because the song Tiny Dancer was on the radio. And somehow I was like either singing it or repeating it back to her. And I was saying, hold me close. I'm trying to dance here. And she said, what are you saying? I said, hold me close. I said, the song, hold me close. I'm trying to dance here. She goes, no, honey, it's not trying to dance here. It's hold me close, Tiny Dancer. I was like, well, what does that mean? And she's like, I don't know. <It's> just... Yeah. Well, I've always thought it was hold me close. I'm trying to dance here. But apparently it's about a tiny dancer. I don't know who the tiny dancer is.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that's a good discernment element that should be added to all United States diocesan discernment process. Is there's a question in the pre-seminary interview, what is your favorite Elton John song? And if they're like, oh, it's just so hard to pick. There's Tiny Dancer. There's Rock. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
Don't call us. We'll call you.
Right.
But if a guy's like, I don't know, I can't name my Elton John, I'm like, great.
Right.
Welcome to the seminary.
You're right.
All right. Well, there it is. Guys, do not give money to Peter's Pence. Do not give money to CCHD. Probably don't give money to anything USCCB related. The cardinals, we live in a corrupt time period. At least during the Renaissance, when the popes were spending all this money from indulgences, they were making some pretty good art.
Right, right.
At least they were making something good.
Yeah.
When they were embezzling money. Now they're making Elton John films, and that's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. They achieved, you know, the Borgia popes, you know, for all their sins, they did, at times have good worldly taste, you know, and they were capable of funding worldly excellence in the form of great art. So that's more than you can say for this, for the crowd around Francis. They're neither impressively spiritual nor impressively worldly. You end up with a church that is, you know, and I think that's a consequence of the church losing her mind, you know, losing reason and losing revelation, losing her soul. So when you have a modernist church, you end up with a church that's at once irrational and faithless. And that's a pretty scary combination.
Yeah. So the way we dig ourselves out is we turn to Jesus and Mary. We can't do this on our own. I mean, this is a supernatural recovery that we need, George. You know, I mean, it's not just like we changed some policies. I mean, it's true. We got to ask the questions. We've got to hold our bishops accountable. But man, this is so bad. when you got Vatican funding gay sex scene in Rocket Man, that's pretty bad. Like, we're screwed. Let's just be honest. We're screwed. All right.
Yeah. And it's not a question of grace, because we know the grace is there. The question is, are we going to cooperate with that grace?
Right.
And for the last 50 years or so or more, the church really hasn't been cooperating with that grace.
That's right.
And the moment it starts cooperating with that grace, you know, we're going to see great things happen in the church again.
Yep. So everybody pray the rosary. If you haven't seen my video on the Advent challenge, watch that. Try to go to Latin Mass on the Sundays of Lent. We've already done two of them, so you got two more to go. Check out the Latin Mass. Pray the rosary. If you haven't been praying the rosary every day, Advent's a great time to get onto that practice, to break the beads out. Pray at least 5 decades every single day. Maybe consider 15 decades on a Sunday. And do some penance. You know, make Fridays a real fast. Don't eat meat. Maybe skip some meals. Correspond with the graces that God is giving us. It doesn't just happen by osmosis. God calls for a synergy, for our wills to conform to His will. So that's the game plan. Just traditional Catholic practice. Go to Mass, pray the rosary, read the Bible, fast, do penance, do the novenas. That's it, right? So, okay, George, how can people support you?
Oh, I have a GoFundMe account that's available through both Facebook, George Neumeier Facebook, and on Twitter. It's linked to on Twitter at George_Neumeier. And your audience has been tremendously generous towards me, and I am very grateful for that.
Well, I myself, and I know the people that watch this channel, want to get inside information, and you're one of the few journalists who actually will walk up to these cardinals with a phone and ask them the questions. In fact, you might be the only one that actually walks up with the phone and asks them the questions. So I appreciate you. I love having you on. I love seeing, you know, what you're up to. And every time I see one of these videos, I'm thinking, man, we got to get George on and talk about this. So everyone out there, support George Neumeier. There's the GoFundMe page. It will be included in the show notes below this video, so you can just click it. And I am a supporter of George Neumeier. I give the man money because no one else in the major media supports him. So if you like the stories he's bringing out, you know, consider giving him a donation. He really appreciates it. And George, thanks for being on. We really appreciate you. Hope you're having a happy Advent. And is there anything else we can do for you?
Oh, no. You've done a tremendous amount for me. I'm very grateful. And thanks a lot for having me on.
Great. All right. We're going to close with a Hail Mary. And this Hail Mary is going to be for Our Lady, asking Our Lady to purify the Vatican and the Holy See. In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Ave Maria, gratia plena, Dominus tecum, benedicta tu in mulieribus et benedictus fructus ventris tui, Iesus. Sancta Maria, Mater Dei, ora pro nobis peccatoribus, nunc et in hora mortis nostrae. Amen. In nomine Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. All right, everybody, happy Advent. If you haven't clicked the like button, please click the like button. If you haven't subscribed, please hit the subscribe button. I would really appreciate that. Hit notifications all. You'll be notified of the live streams. And also, thank you to everyone who supports on Patreon at patreon.com/Dr. Taylor Marshall. I just signed a ton of books this morning, and they're being mailed out as soon as this show's over. So anyone who's supporting on Patreon, you'll be getting autographed free books from me in the days to come. George Neumeier, thanks for being with us. Appreciate you.
Sure. Thanks a lot. God bless you.
See you again soon. Godspeed.